Gilman and Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 102.5. The game, Caroline Fenton is here. Hello, Caroline.
Hello, how are you?
So today, another Titans practice in the books. The Titans had the pads on. I would say today's practice, you were there, I was there. Mm-hmm. Today's practice was as close to a scrimmage as they will probably give us until they actually have a scrimmage, which I would assume would be next week, since I believe the preseason is in 2 weeks. I think that's right. That might be wrong. I don't know. The third preseason game, the lack of the fourth one has been throwing me off. So we pushed the preseason back a week. So we would, in normal times, have a preseason game on Thursday, Friday, or Saturday of next week. But instead, it's going to be 2 weeks, which I believe is a Friday night game. They're going to have a preseason game, so I'm guessing there will be a scrimmage next week. But this was as close to a scrimmage as you could ask for right now. So I want to get to some takeaways right off the top. That's what we've been doing. First off, I am a little torn, and this will be an interesting talk for TD tomorrow, but I'm a little torn as far as practice is concerned, because I don't know about you, but I feel like for the most part, outside of anything A.J. Brown does, I feel like the defense is outplaying the offense rather consistently. Would you agree with that from the 2 days that you've seen?
Especially yesterday. Yesterday, it felt overwhelmingly like the defense was making strides that the offense just really wasn't making. Aside from Ryan Tannehill and A.J. Brown. I mean, those two are just clicking like it's vintage Ryan Tannehill and A.J. Brown. But I still felt that a little bit today as well. But overall, yes, I think the defense looks better than the offense at this point.
But then how much can I read into that when Taylor Lewan is not out there, Derrick Henry is not out there, Julio Jones is not out there, Josh Reynolds is not out there, even Ty Sam Brilo, who I think they're going to put at right tackle, he's not out there. So you're missing two tackles, a number one wide receiver, the best running back in the NFL. I mean, it's hard for me to read into this, so I try not to get too caught up in it. I mean, we're going to need the preseason, and I don't know how much of the first-team defense is going to play in the preseason. And they're without Bud Dupree, and Caleb Farley's not really doing anything, and Harold Landry wasn't in there today, and I don't think Denico Autry was in there today. But, I mean, I do get a little concerned that I feel like the progress the defense has made is really in reference to who the Titans don't practice. I mean, they do not practice. Julio Jones is not going to practice. I did a radio interview in a different city. And like, hey, how's Julio doing? And let me just say this. I don't know, because Julio doesn't practice. Now, that doesn't mean that I think that Julio should practice. This seems to be kind of his MO. He just doesn't practice. He's a player, not a practicer. They're not going to let Derrick Henry practice. So what do you take away from that? So let's put that off to the side. The other thing is the rookies are really behind. I mean, they are really behind right now. Dylan Raidens is not an option to start.
He had a bad day today and yesterday.
So Vrabel said inconsistent, and there are times where he does block. I mean, he got pancaked today.
Yeah.
He honestly is not ready to play. I wonder, and I worry this, and I, oh my God, people are going to be mad at me after a handful of practice. I mean, we had two bad practices. I wonder if they're discouraged by his lack of improvement or where he sits right now, having been a second-round pick. I had somebody today say to me that, you know, well, once Raidens cracks the starting lineup and he gets in there, then they'll have Lamb, Sam Brilo, and Quesenberry to be his swing tackles. And I'm like, look, I don't see Dylan Raidens cracking the starting lineup this year. I don't think he's an option. Dez Fitzpatrick at wide receiver. They're not going to cut a fourth-round pick, but he literally doesn't stand out. And it will hurt me, and I assume hurt them, if they have to cut Marcus Johnson or Chester Rogers in order to keep Dez Fitzpatrick on the active roster. Now, you do wonder, could the Titans use injured reserve as kind of a way to stick Dez Fitzpatrick on the shelf because he's not ready to play right now? Could they use injured reserve as a way to stick Dez Fitzpatrick on the shelf so you're not cutting a fourth-round pick, but allowing you to keep the better wide receivers because that's what Marcus Johnson and Chester Rogers are? I mean, both of those guys should be on the Tennessee Titans this year. They have done enough so far in camp to make me think they should be on the Titans. So that's another thing worth watching. The rookies, Caleb Farley has done really nothing. He gets out there and is allowed to go one-on-one with a wide receiver when they don't throw a ball. He has not gotten in there in any sort of 11-on-11 or 7-on-7 where there's bodies flying and the quarterback's throwing the ball and there's decisions and plays to be made. He's not doing any of that. So how can I believe that he's going to be ready to start the season? Raidens is definitely not ready right now. Fitzpatrick is not ready. Who'd they take in the third round? I could care less about Monty Rice. Molden's made some nice plays. I mean, I think that Molden could play, but I still think Chris Jackson's probably ahead of him just based upon who's been better at camp. So the rookies, and I know it's early. There's still a month to go before you have to make that final 45 in the first game. But the rookies do not look like they're ready to claim a role on this team. So I think that's a concern that I think we should monitor and I would be worried about. And when you ask Vrabel about the rookies, you ask him about an individual rookie, like for Raidens today, for example, he really is not positive. I mean, there isn't much of a silver lining to the things that Vrabel says. The other thing is the kicking game. And I saw TD put out at ESPN.com the bold prediction. And his bold prediction is that Steven Goskowski is going to be the kicker for the Titans in 2021. Let me say this, and I love TD. I don't think that's a bold prediction. I think that's probably common sense. And I know this. And today they kicked, and I think that McCann maybe was okay. I stood under the goalpost. I've seen enough of Tucker McCann. It's time for him to go. Like last week, I thought that he had outkicked Haubiel, and they released Haubiel because I told you, I sat here and I said, look, Haubiel is not going to be the kicker of this team. And they moved on from him over the weekend. I have now seen enough from Tucker McCann at training camp. They can move on from him too. Haven't seen enough from Sam Ficken, though I don't think he's any good. So we can watch him kick some more at camp. But I've seen enough from Tucker McCann. Time to move on, bring somebody else in. I still think the answer, though, to the kicking problem is somebody's going to get cut. We see this every year. I remember a couple of years ago, the Dallas Cowboys cut Dan Bailey and went with a rookie. And not that Dan Bailey is the greatest kicker of all time, though Dan Bailey was very well accomplished. I think you're going to see that somewhere where an established kicker gets unseated. And then I think that's when you go get your kicker. That's probably the way I think the Titans will treat it. And I mean, that worked with Ryan Succop. It also didn't work with Cairo Santos, and we remember the whole kicking carousel of 2019, so that's at least going to be worth keeping an eye on. But I ultimately believe that the Titans are going to claim somebody's kicker who they release, and that guy will be the kicker. But as far as Tucker McCann's concerned, I've seen enough time for him to go. So, again, I mean, the defense right now in pads is outplaying the offense, but the offense isn't playing most of their good players. I think the rookies have got a long freaking way to go. And I'm worried about Fitzpatrick. Like, I'm worried about Raidens and Fitzpatrick. The other guys, Molden will be fine. And Monty Rice, you know, is the fourth middle linebacker on the team. So how much does he matter? And then everybody else after that. Brady Breeze got kicked out of practice today. Mm-hmm. So basically what happened was, I think Kaiser threw a pass. This was at the end when this was like a high school practice from this sense. After about an hour, they blew a whistle, and all of a sudden you see Tannehill and A.J. Brown and Kevin Byard and Roger Saffold, and you see all those guys, Jayon Brown, and you see all those guys running off, and they come back with no pads on and are just standing on the sidelines. And it turned itself into a junior varsity practice. So the varsity guys, you know, they blew the whistle. Good job, varsity. They went out, and then it was Nate Davis and a bunch of guys. And so it's at the end of practice, and Kaiser is out there throwing a pass for Dez Fitzpatrick, one that I thought Dez Fitzpatrick should have caught, but Brady Breeze went flying and ended up knocking off the pass, and Vrabel just immediately kicked Brady Breeze out of practice. And I saw that because when Brady Breeze went up there and made the play, I said, that's the first time I've noticed Brady Breeze. And then immediately I'm hearing, Brady, you're done.
And that was quick.
It was, I felt bad for Brady Breeze. I felt bad for Brady Breeze because Vrabel immediately just, you know, in a very colorful tone, Vrabel lets Brady Breeze know that that's it for him at practice. Get out. And Brady Breeze, I don't know if he's like shocked or something, but he just kind of stood there and then like tried to go back to the huddle. And Vrabel's just like, get out. Like, and so
with finally, more words, I'm sure.
Well, and then finally somebody, Brady, get out. So then Brady Breeze had to take the walk of shame. Then they ran one more play and it was over. So, I mean, but again, like the rookies, man, I'm down on the rookies. This will be a conversation for TD tomorrow since he's been out there every day. Like I'm down on the Titans rookies. Now it's early. It's early in training camp, but Farley doesn't do anything. Raiden's is nowhere near starting. I do not think, right now, if there was a game today, the Arizona Cardinals week one, and I have no idea about Farley's health, but I'm going to say he's active. Raiden's is probably inactive for the game. Des Fitzpatrick is definitely inactive for the game. Monty Rice, just from a number standpoint, is probably inactive for the game. Molden is active. Fitzpatrick was in the fourth round. Rashad Weaver's active, but he doesn't really do much. Racy McMath might not make the team, and Brady Breeze is definitely not making the team. So it's early. It's early. And honestly, in the past, I haven't been to practice every single day to be able to walk away and say, okay, these rookies aren't there yet. I mean, it is August 4th, but I am worried about the Titans rookies. So I just want that out there as well. And then the kicking game. Last week I had seen enough from Hallbeal, and he had to go, and he did. I've now seen enough from Tucker McCann. He can go. 615-737-1025, your thoughts on practice.
Yeah, I mean, I think yesterday I came out with a net positive. Saw some things I liked, saw some things I didn't like, but came out with a net positive. I think today I'm leaning toward a little bit more of a net negative, because the things that I saw yesterday that were good kind of repeated again today. I like what I saw from Ryan Tannehill. I like what I saw from A.J. Brown. Tucker McCann hit a 53-yarder field goal, so, I mean, not terrible from him, just inconsistency. I mean, he hit everything yesterday, inconsistent today, hit a 53-yard field goal, missed a 40-yard field goal, so just inconsistencies there.
He sucks.
Didn't really see anything that wowed me other than A.J. Brown on the wide receiver side. I mean, saw some drop passes, slow feet on the wide receivers today. So, I mean, I'm not discouraged. It is one day of practice, but I didn't step away from anything thinking, wow, this just really floored me.
So there were a couple of other things that bothered me, and I'm just going to get them off my chest. The first thing was the tight ends. And I watched the tight ends warming up with the blocking sled. And I get it, that everybody that's a tight end on the roster has to block except for Ferkser. We know Ferkser can't block or hasn't been able to block in the past. They've never trusted Ferkser to block. So now why all of a sudden are we just going to assume that Ferkser is a good blocker? But I watched all of them. And Tommy Hudson, number 89, I think he's going to make the team, by the way. Tommy Hudson, number 89, blows up the tackling sled. And Stocker blows up the tackling sled. And then Ferkser gives it like a little push. And I'm like, dude, you're going to have to do more than that. Like, if you're going to be on this team at that level, you're going to have to do more than that. Like, you are going to have to block. If you're going to be an every down tight end on a team that's Derrick Henry, you're not just going to get in the way. This is not the run and shoot. Like, you are going to have to block. So I'm a little worried about that. The second thing that I would say is worth noting here is, and I feel great about this, is I really like how the defensive line is coming together. Because we know Simmons is a beast. We know Autry's been a beast in the past, but Murchison, number 91, and Tyre Tarte, number 93, just constantly show up. And now that they put the pads on, because it's one thing to try to judge them when they're not wearing pads, but now that they put the pads on, I can't tell you how many big-time reps I've seen Tyre Tarte where I've been like, woo, Tyre Tarte back in the backfield again. Or 91 Murchison right there. So those two guys. And then there's another guy, number 97, Tevin Coley, who I've never heard of.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks like he's making plays on defensive line. So defensive line, which we all know how tough, you know, the front seven has been the last couple of years, especially after losing Jarrell Casey. But defensive line might be where I'm most optimistic now that they put the pads on. So, again, make of it what you will. It's practice. And Corey Curtis texted me and said they play next Friday night. So they won't have a scrimmage next week. Man, they play next Friday night. Is that not crazy? They play next Friday.
Friday, and then it's the two following Saturdays. Is that right?
Yep. And again, I have no idea, though, how I have no clue how preseason is going to work. Like, are they going to play the starters in game two a lot? Are they going to play the starters in game three? Are they not going to play the starters at all? If it's anything like practice, they're not going to play those guys. So today at practice, second day with pads. And again, the rookies have got to step it up because I do not see them using these rookies right now. And I know it worked for them last year, but I don't think you can get by not playing rookies. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Chris Sanders will join us in just a little bit. 615-737-1025. And the wide receiver room. So there is, we brought up A.J. Brown. We know Julio's not practicing. Mm-hmm. Josh Reynolds has been hurt. But this is a very interesting wide receiver room. We'll discuss our thoughts on it next. And then we'll get to Chris Stillman and company. We are live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game, and we're streaming on the Game Nashville app.
You know, I think Josh was a pro. I think he learned a lot in the spring and a lot of the transition to the offense and really got off to a really good start in training camp. And he's working hard to get back. And you know, when he's ready to get back, we'll put him back out there and hopefully he can pick up, you know, where he left off. Because like I said, he was doing some good things.
That was Vrabel on Josh Reynolds, who has not been out there. I mean, I saw Reynolds make one catch like the first day of practice, and I haven't heard from him since. Though I have seen him the last couple of days on the ARC trainer, not the bike. And that should be noted because we don't know what Reynolds' injury is, but the assault bike. Are you familiar with an assault bike?
I am not.
So an assault bike has like a giant fan in the middle of it.
That's the one that you pump with your arms like this.
Right.
Yes.
So he's not using an assault bike. Mm-hmm. He's using an ARC trainer, which is essentially a fancy elliptical, as opposed to an assault bike, which makes me think that it's probably an upper body injury to Josh Reynolds.
Got it.
He hasn't been there, but he will be, and they don't seem to be concerned. Julio hasn't been out there. They don't seem to be concerned about that. So I think we're all in agreement that the Titans are definitely going to carry A.J. Brown, Josh Reynolds, and Julio Jones as their top three receivers. Now's where it gets questionable after that. I think they don't have a choice but to take Des Fitzpatrick. They used a fourth-round pick on him. I believe they traded up in the fourth round to get Des Fitzpatrick. Des Fitzpatrick has nice size, but honestly, I've been to all these practices, and he really hasn't done jack. And I am expecting at some point, a guy's taken in the fourth round when he's playing against the third stringers, I'm expecting him to make a play, hasn't done it. So put him to the side for a second, because I think they have to carry him, but I don't see him contributing right now. Most teams carry five or six wide receivers. In some cases, you'll see a team take seven wide receivers. This may be that team. You go light on tight ends because we know there's no depth there. Maybe you take the extra receiver. If it's up to me, and I get a say in this, I'm carrying those three, AJ, Julio, Josh Reynolds. I'm also for sure carrying Marcus Johnson, number 88. Now, if you add in Fitzpatrick, I'm at five, which gives me one spot for somebody else. Racy McMath in the sixth round has kind of fizzled out after the first day of practice where everybody's like, oh my God, look at Racy McMath. He really hasn't done anything as a receiver. And to be honest with you, I find the special teams drills to be boring and you can't really tell. So we'll put him to the side for a second. Nick Westbrook-Ikhina had a drop today in a warm-up, which bothers me when a guy's dropping it and there's nobody on you. Nick Westbrook-Ikhina is not the offensive player that either Marcus Johnson, 88, or Chester Rogers, number 80, is. But he does have special teams experience, and he's got a decent body, and for some reason, according to Joe Rexroad, they absolutely freaking love him. So now let's put him off to the side. Then there's Cody Hollister and Cam Batson, two guys that have been here for a while and have played in big games, and they've trusted in the past, but I'm not sure either guy would be claimed by another team except maybe Atlanta if they were released, and maybe you could sneak those guys onto the practice squad. And Batson's been returning punts, but I believe Cam Batson only returned meaningful punts once in his career. It was a Thursday night game against Jacksonville 3 years ago. It was an unmitigated disaster. Chester Rogers has the most experience returning punts. He's been returning punts in practice. I'll take Rogers over Batson as far as punt returns concerned. So, I mean, I think I'm looking at right now the wide receiver room looking at A.J. Brown, Julio Jones, Josh Reynolds, Marcus Johnson, Chester Rogers, and Dez Fitzpatrick. The problem is, I don't have a gunner now. But that's, I look at the wide receivers, and I think that if they, and I know they're going to, if they release Marcus Johnson, it will be a monumental mistake. I'm sorry. I get football's different than basketball, but you watch basketball and one guy scores every time down the court, chances are he's probably a pretty good player. Every time that they do this stuff, whether it's first team, second team, third team, here's number 88 making another play, Marcus Johnson. So I, for the life of me, cannot accept them releasing Marcus Johnson. So now you ask yourself, okay, Fitzpatrick's a fourth-round pick. He's not going to do anything, but you can't burn a fourth-round pick like that. So what do you do? I mean, this is a conundrum the Titans are going to find themselves in, where I think two guys, Chester Rogers and Marcus Johnson, have made the team, and I think both can contribute right now. And the other thing I would say, and I, you know me, I'm always hard on the Titans special teams, especially the special teams coach, but I would say this. Remember last year against the Ravens, Corey Davis went out. Adam Humphries hurt with that concussion, not coming back. You had A.J. Brown and a bunch of guys that stunk, and it was evident in the fourth quarter with Ryan Tannehill trying to lead them back that he wasn't going to be able to beat the Ravens with Nick Westbrook-Akina and Khalif Raymond and Cam Batson along with A.J. Brown. Now, in fairness to those guys, Tannehill missed two wide-open guys in that fourth quarter. But I feel more comfortable if Rodgers and Johnson, both whom have experience in the NFL, are on this team because Reynolds is hurt and we know Julio's got an injury history and doesn't practice. So there is an interesting development that I'm noticing in camp as far as the wide receivers are concerned.
Marcus Johnson. I think you mentioned it last week about learning the numbers, and I've gotten there in my past couple of days at practice, but 88 is one that I love to keep my eyes on.
Every time.
Marcus Johnson. I think one thing that I really love about A.J. Brown, for example, is that when he catches the ball, he knows that his job is only halfway done, and he will fight for more yardage. I've seen that from Marcus Johnson, and I like him a lot.
Well, I mean, every wide receiver in camp is told to go run all the way down the end of the field when you catch it, and they're not going to tackle the guy. So, I mean, I think there's a big difference there between A.J. Brown and how he can shed off tacklers and whatever, and Marcus Johnson. I just think Marcus Johnson is, and again, he's been cut multiple times in his career.
Mm-hmm.
He's been a practice squad guy. So I'm not trying to get too excited, but, I mean, I think Marcus Johnson's going to be pretty good. I mean, I think that I shouldn't say going to be pretty good. I think he's better than anything you have after those three guys. And I understand that you can rely on Dez Fitzpatrick because you took him in the fourth round and you can't cut a fourth round pick. And I know that Marcus Johnson in his career has 42 catches and that's it. But I think Marcus Johnson should be on the Titans. And it is an odd situation they find themselves in. Chris Sanders, former Titans receiver, he knows all about that. He's next right here on Stillman & Company. Hey, ESPN 94.9 is the official English radio home of the Nashville Soccer Club. Listen in tonight, Nashville SC and the New England Revolution, pregame at 5:45, and the match begins at 6. Stillman & Company, Chris Sanders next. It's ESPN 102.5, the game. Still in the company, delivered by TriStar Moving. Again, the Titans, 1 week of practice in the books. Today, Jim Wyatt asked Vrabel if, you know, what have you seen? And he said, look, I'm not going to give a State of the Union 1 week after practice. I will say this. The rookies, it's only been a week, but they are buried right now, and I'm not seeing any. I would not put Dez Fitzpatrick in a game right now. I would not put Dylan Radins in a game right now. I would not carry Racy McMath on the 53-man roster right now. I mean, it's going to be an uphill climb. Chris Sanders joins us now on the program, former Titans receiver.
Yeah.
So, Chris, I want to start with this, and I got a lot to cover with you today, but I want to start with this, which is Dylan Radins right now is not in a position to start at tackle for the Titans.
Wow.
I don't even think he's in a position to compete right now. Now, I know it's early in camp. Dez Fitzpatrick, I never notice him in the wide receiver drills. I never notice him in the 7-on-7s or in the 11-on-11s. I notice Marcus Johnson. I notice Chester Rogers. I notice those guys. I don't notice him. And I'm starting to wonder, okay, when should I get concerned about the rookies into camp? How long does it take before rookies are ready to play?
I mean, you got to be consistent, and I know you're kind of worried right now, but there's a lot going on. I mean, I know they're definitely going to make the team, but I just think that they're swimming of trying not to make a mistake. So a lot of guys are going to panic. So the one thing they got to do as a rookie is just go in there and show up on film. I mean, just like Fitzpatrick, I agree with you 100%. I understand he's a good player. I understand he can make plays. But if you don't show up on films, if you don't show up on 7-on-7, and you don't stick out, you're just another guy, and we just don't need another guy. We have a whole bunch of players on offense. We have a whole bunch of players at receiver. But the guys that are going to make plays is the guys that are going to stick out. And Fitzpatrick hasn't sticking out. Johnson has. And and every time I look on the news and every time I look at the videos, he's standing out. So if the guys that you drafted and the guys that you picked in the draft are not standing out, Jared, that is not a good sight to see.
How long does it take before a rookie is ready to contribute in the NFL? Because, again, it's only been a week at camp.
You're true. I mean, it all depends on what position you are. I mean, if you're an offensive lineman, you got to look at so many things. You got to look at the front. You got to look at the secondary. You got to look at all those things. As a wide receiver, I just got to know if it's press man, if it's cover two or cover one. That's all I need to know. Because when I came in as a rookie, you know, I struggled a little bit with the playbook. But once I got it down and I understand how to read coverage, I just had to let my skill take over. But at different positions, you got so many things. But at the end of the day, if you can't pick up the offense and you can't pick up the things, they're going to find somebody else to replace you. So, you know, they just got to just settle down, relax, and let the game come to them. And that's why we talked about that, why it's so important to have Farley in camp, to have Farley out on the field, because now he has to understand the speed of the game as opposed to just taking mental reps.
Are you concerned at all? Julio Jones doesn't practice
very
much.
Concerned.
He got in there the other day, you know, dropped a touchdown, got up kind of gingerly. We haven't seen him since. Josh Reynolds doesn't practice much, though. He's been dealing with an injury.
Right.
Derrick Henry doesn't practice really at all. Taylor Lewan has been very limited in practice coming off the knee. Ty Sambrylo has not returned to practice. Are you nervous about the veteran guys on the offense that haven't practiced?
Yeah, I'm very concerned. I mean, we talk about how do you build a great team. You build a great team with guys that are healthy and playing consistent. How you can play consistent if you're not on the field, and how you going to build camaraderie if you're not on the field? How you going to build chemistry if your main guys are not on the field? But the one name that I'm very, very concerned about, and we said this maybe about 4 or 5 weeks ago, is we want Julio Jones to be on the team. We wanted to sign him. Everybody was excited about it. I was excited. But what was the one knock that we had on him is we was concerned about the injuries. And when you talk about injuries, that's the knock that he had in Atlanta, and that's the knock that he had the last 3 years. So I'm really concerned about that. And also, when you talk about Julio Jones being hurt, the one thing that he's going to miss is not just – we know physically he can do it. We know physically he can catch. We know physically he can make some explosive plays. But the one thing you're going to miss is the timing with Tannehill. You got to make sure the timing is good. Why is A.J. Brown being so flourishing now? Why is A.J. Brown look like he's a polished receiver now? It's because, number one, Tannehill trusts him, and the timing is there. Why? Because they're both on the field making plays.
Chris Sanders, former Titans receiver, is our guest. Chester Rogers last year spent the entire season, I believe, on the Titans practice squad.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a guy who has played over the last 4 years in Indianapolis prior to that. Marcus Johnson last year, I think, actually had a decent season for the Colts.
He did.
And then he got released, and he ended up on the Titans practice squad. Johnson's got 42 career catches. Rogers has 111 career catches. And yet, I can't stop seeing those guys at practice.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if it's Tannehill or Woodside, but both of those guys are finding those receivers. How excited should I get, and how much should I look at it and say, hey, these guys were guys that Indianapolis didn't want anymore, teams around the league didn't want, were on a practice squad, and how much of it should I say, okay, this is a solid addition for a fourth and fifth wide receiver?
No, they're very, very solid. Number one, the situation we had with Julio Jones going down, now you have some depth at wide receiver. And I'm going to give you a perfect example. Derek Mason was the sixth receiver when we went to the Super Bowl. But once he got a chance to prove himself, everybody knew that the talent that he had was coming to fruition. Sometimes you're in a position, sometimes you're on a team to where you just don't have a chance to flourish. You know, Chester and Johnson didn't really have a chance to be flourishing because they had some other guys in front of them. But now they have an opportunity to go out there and make a name for themselves. I mean, and that's exactly what they're doing. Because listen, if you keep getting cut and people keep telling you that you can't make plays and you can't do this and you're working hard every day, you start to develop an edge I watch those guys. Watch those guys in one-on-one. Watch those guys in drills. Watch those guys and what they do. They want to be perfect in everything they do. Why do they want to be perfect? It's because all their pro career, they kept telling them they can't do that. So I think you should get happy. The reason why you should get happy is because if Julio Jones goes down, A.J. Brown goes down, and Reynolds goes down, you still have some quality guys that can come in and make plays.
Chris, is this division over with the latest news to Carson Wentz and now Quentin Nelson hurt? And they say 5 to 12 weeks, and everybody out of Indianapolis is trying to sugarcoat it as, well, you know, if it's on the lower end of the 5 to 12 weeks, then I think that it'll be like, I'm not trying to sugarcoat it here that Caleb Farley could play week one because I don't know if he can. And I'm not sugarcoating the Bud Dupree situation because I'm worried that he's still coming off the ACL and now he's got COVID and won't be ready to play week one against the Cardinals. In Indianapolis, they're trying to say, hey, could be 5 weeks, wouldn't miss a game.
Crazy.
Could be 12 weeks, they'd probably at that point be 2-5 or 1-6. I mean, is this division over at this point with the latest injury to Wentz and now Quentin Nelson?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know who's going to win the AFC South. I mean, you made a great point. I mean, the Indianapolis Colts don't have a quarterback. I mean, I know they got Eason and some other guys there, but it's why I know we're not talking about Jacksonville. I know we're not talking about Houston, but with those guys getting hurt from Indianapolis and with the Tennessee Titans with Farley and Dupree and, you know, different major guys like that being hurt, does it even the playing for Jacksonville? Does it even the playing for the Houston Texans? So, you know, it's wide open. I mean, I know we can say the Tennessee Titans are the front runner, and I think they are the front runners because of the quarterback situation, Tannehill, with the running back situation with Henry, and the receiver with A.J. Brown. I would say they're the front runner. But just say if Dupree doesn't play, if they say Farley doesn't play, if Julio Jones doesn't play, I think it evens the playing for the AFC South.
Yeah, but you can't tell me. You cannot tell me you think the Houston Texans are going to win this division.
Okay. You got to remember. I'm going to take you to school. I know you're looking at the Jacksonville Jaguars, and it looks like a mess. I know you're saying the Houston Texans, it looks like a mess. But you got to remember, they're hearing all season that they're no good. They're hearing all season that it's a train wreck. They're hearing all season that they're the worst team in the NFL. So you don't think those teams are building the edge? I know that sounds like coach talking. It sounds cliches, but I'm telling you, if they start to build a culture in the Houston Texans and build a culture with the Jacksonville Jaguars, it evens the playing. I know you're going to look up and say, wow, how in the world can the Houston Texans win the division when they had all that mess? They change attitudes, they change coaches, and if everybody buys in, then they become a different team. So, you know, it evens the playing when some of your key guys are out.
Chris Sanders, what are you looking forward to? Next week's the first preseason game, but what are you looking forward to for really another strong week of camp? What is kind of the focus in the second or third week of camp?
I just want to see. I know the defense has been dominating, you know, basically the whole time. I want to see the offense just dominate in every team, like 7-on-7, you know, inside drill. I want to see them dominate. I mean, I know some of the players are not there, but I just want to see consistency. I mean, I understand, Henry's not in and Julio Jones is not in, but still, I still want to see some consistency on the offensive ball next week.
There you go. Chris Sanders, former Titans receiver, as always, joining us on the program. And I cannot wait if Indianapolis has injuries going into week 3. I cannot wait for these Texans and Jags games where Chris will lecture me. I promise you.
Oh, no
Chris,
doubt.
Chris will lecture me to no end about these are NFL players. And
exactly.
Anytime you go out there against NFL players, anything can happen. So I'm looking forward to that on the pregame show.
But have I been right, though?
Nah. I mean, they're not NFL players, so yes, you are correct in that regard.
Okay, 4 years
ago.
Oh,
by the way, Chris, you would have loved it. So I was standing right there today before we let you go, and I know you got to go.
Sure, no problem.
Drew Rosenhaus. How well you know Drew Rosenhaus?
He's an agent. I don't know him too much.
Okay, he and Paul Kaharsky.
Oh, did they fight? Did they fight?
Oh, well, I mean, like, it was, I mean, like, fight is probably, like, too strong of a word. They chirped at each other. And it was, Chris, I got to tell you, it was so funny. And I can't believe I'm actually on Paul's side. Like, having seen the whole thing go down,
yeah.
I'm on Paul's side because Rosenhaus, I mean, he just thinks he is the coolest guy in the history of the NFL.
But also, Paul Kaharsky does, too.
That is true. I think maybe it's because of what I know about Paul, like, because
right.
I know Paul, and then to see, like,
right.
Rosenhaus acting the way. I would tell you, I'm on Paul's side with this one. I got to be on his side. But
gotcha.
it was pretty funny. Chris, appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
Hey, you're welcome, my friend.
Yep.
Okay, bye-bye.
So I know that, I don't know if people know this, but Drew Rosenhaus was at practice today. And I'm sitting there watching, you know, as I'm walking by, I don't even notice Drew Rosenhaus is there. Like the players, I think families or friends or something, they're there. And I didn't even notice that Drew Rosenhaus was there. So practice is over, walking back, and I'm walking with Paul. And Paul says something to Drew, and Drew says something to Paul, and I don't really, you know, I'm just kind of standing there. I turn around, and all of a sudden, you know, Rosenhaus has his sunglasses on. First of all, he's wearing pants out there at practice today, which to me is a giant red flag.
Okay, do not go out giving out fashion criticisms.
It's hot.
Yeah, it's hot. He might be comfortable in pants.
No, if you wear pants at training camp, you know, unless you're like one of these coaches that wears like hoodies, you know, like, no. So that already got it. But I mean, Rosenhaus was really trying to be like Johnny Cool. Like he was standing right kind of by where.
Pants make you cool now?
No, he was trying to be Johnny Cool in addition to his pants.
Okay.
So Rosenhaus is like trying to be like standing right there as close as he's allowed to get to the practice field. And, I mean, you know, the MO on Rosenhaus is that he'll stand there right by the gate and try to recruit players. You know, I mean, that's kind of been what people have said about him or anything. So, basically, Paul says something to Drew Rosenhaus, and Rosenhaus says something back like, hey, anytime you need something, give me a call. So, Kaharsky turns around and is like, that's just not true. That's not true. How can you say that? That's not true. And I don't really interact with agents. I don't care. I mean, I interact with some, but not more so than, like, I'm not a reporter who's calling for contract stories and things like that. So I don't deal with Rosenhaus. But I have heard that that's kind of accurate. And I'm sitting there watching this, and I'm like, oh, I wonder how Rosenhaus is going to react to this. And I mean, you talk like 0 to 100. I mean, Rosenhaus got so personal. First of all, Rosenhaus is like, I'm just here to deal with my clients today. I'm just here to deal with my clients. I just don't, you know, whatever. And I'm like, dude, like, they're still talking in the middle of the field. Like, there's no player that's going to, hold on, Mike. I got to go over and talk to my agent over here in the corner. Like, no. And then, so they're coming back, and Rosenhaus is like, I got to deal with my clients. I'm here for my clients. I'm here for my clients, which is, okay, okay, Johnny, cool. Then, I don't know what Paul said to Rosenhaus, but Rosenhaus basically, then it got real personal. And Rosenhaus was like, basically told Paul that he was a nobody who got fired by ESPN. And
dang.
I mean, they started trading some barbs, and it was. And I knew Chris would love that story. But I got to be honest with you, like, I'm kind of on Paul's side. And I think I'm on Paul's side for two reasons. One, and again, I don't interact with Drew Rosenhaus, so I don't know. But if you're going to tell me, hey, give me a call, I'll call you back. Like, Paul Kaharsky, and I mean, you can have whatever opinion you want of him. He votes on the Hall of Fame. So at the end of the day, and that's important to players.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, that is, he votes on the Hall of Fame. So if you are Drew Rosenhaus, you need to have a good relationship with him. Like, again, and I don't think Jarrell Casey, for example, who's a Rosenhaus client, mm-hmm. I don't think Jarrell Casey's going to the Hall of Fame. But as we learn with Delanie Walker, a lot of times these guys who aren't going to the Hall of Fame
want to
try to think that they should be, if things were broke their way, capable of Hall of Fame. So Drew Rosenhaus should have a good relationship with Paul Kaharsky. He should. You're the agent. You need to have a good relationship with everybody who votes on that. That's just common sense. But then, like, the idea of, oh yeah, call me anytime you need or whatever, and you know you're lying? Like, that's just dumb. Like, and I understand Paul saying, like, no, don't brush me off with that ridiculous, like, nonsense. And so, again, while the drama and the pettiness, and look, I don't know Rosenhaus. I think we all know Paul's level of pettiness. Like, the drama and the pettiness, whatever. But then when Rosenhaus immediately, like, turned around and basically was like, you know, you're just mad you got fired from ESPN, and I got more important people to talk to than you and all that kind of, like, okay, Drew. Like, okay, Drew. Okay. So there was a little skirmish today.
Okay, fancy pants. Did Paul have a problem with his car, too?
I don't know. You know, I mean, Paul has got much, you know, many issues apparently with my car. So I don't know, but I'm taking his side today. And again, I really couldn't care less, but I just want to tell Chris that because I'm sure Chris would have enjoyed that. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025 here on the program. Coming up next, there is a battle at camp that I thought was a legitimate battle, and I still think it's a battle, but who it's a battle of, I'm not sure. We'll discuss that next. Stillman & Company, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game.
What have you seen out of Dylan the first couple days of pads?
I think it needs to be better. It's a young player up front and playing right tackle, playing right guard, playing all over the place because guys are down. We need to, start continuing to make some progress. I think the consistency has been what's been lacking. See a really good play and then, see a mistake that maybe we've made, or he's made previously and that we've tried to correct. And he needs to correct that like every player does so that we're not, making those same mistakes two and three times. That's most important.
That was Mike Vrabel on Dylan Raidens, and I think the kind of hint in there was we need to see some improvement. It's time on Dylan Raidens to, and I didn't know what the plan was for Dylan Raidens when they drafted him. The guy played one football game last season at North Dakota State. And normally for small school guys, there's a bit of an adjustment to the NFL, but especially when you didn't play football. So Raidens didn't play football. He's a second-round pick. I think we all expected him to be battling at right tackle right now. The truth is, he's not. Now, they signed Kendall Lamb. The way this all went down during the offseason, Dennis Kelly was a right tackle. They released Dennis Kelly. They signed Kendall Lamb on day one. They re-signed Ty Sambrylo. And they added Dylan Raidens in the draft. Now, the tackle position is, Lawan is the left tackle, and we all know that. Then there's the battle at right tackle. Then there's David Quesenberry, who was the third string left tackle last year, pressed into duty for most of the year after both Lawan and Sambrylo went down. So I can't tell you on the air who's playing right tackle, but I'm going to let you listen to my question that I asked Vrabel, where it essentially tells you who's playing right tackle and who's not playing right tackle. And here's Vrabel's answer to that question. Go ahead.
You talked about Sambrylo eventually returning as an option at right tackle. Kendall has not been at right tackle since really the beginning of camp. Why play him, practice him on the left side, and how comfortable would you feel about him on the right side?
Yeah, we'd feel very comfortable. I think that, what we've tried to do is put the best five guys out there. And with this camp, with Taylor, with where he's at now, that's been Quiz and Lamb. And Kendall is going to have an opportunity to compete at right tackle. He will. So will Ty. I've told him that. And Quiz has done a nice job. He's battled. And, I think he's a better player now than when he got here. So, we're trying to work all those guys in and just try to find the best group for where we're at right now in practice.
So notice he didn't say Dylan was battling for right tackle. So let's take him out. So Raidens is not in the right tackle battle. He said he's going to let Sambrylo, Lamb, and Quesenberry battle it out. So I'm trying to read through this like I don't think they like Kendall Lamb very much because they haven't been playing him on the right side. They've been playing David Quesenberry. And as he said, I think Quez has been doing a nice job. But the idea of we want the best five out there, so in this case, we'd rather have Lamb, a better player at left tackle, than Quesenberry, who played left tackle last year, I don't believe. If it were just, hey, Lamb's going to be the right tackle, or Lamb is battling with Sambrylo for the right tackle spot, then he'd be playing right tackle and getting the reps at right tackle, and Quesenberry would be playing as the placeholder at left tackle for Lawan. So by Lamb playing left tackle in that spot, I think that tells me where they feel, which is we like Quesenberry more than Lamb, and we want Sambrylo back out here, and we really want Sambrylo to play right tackle, and then we're deciding between Lamb or Quesenberry as to who the swing tackle is going to be because we know it can't be Raidens because he's not ready. And that concerns me because that's a whole bunch of stuff without an answer as to who is the right tackle. And right tackle is an important position. I've told this story, but the first week that I worked here at this radio station, Floyd and I were working together for the first time, and I didn't really know him. And so we're just making small talk, and I'm like, hey, Floyd, Titans going to be any good this year? And this was Ken Wisenhunt's 3-13 disaster. And he looks at me dead ass and goes, we don't have a right tackle. And I'm like, that's kind of a big deal, huh? Like, that's kind of a big deal. And Ian, you remember a couple of years ago when Nate Davis was drafted to be the right guard, and then he got hurt, and Pamphile was signed to be the right guard, and then he got hurt, and you remember how much of an unmitigated disaster that was.
Yes, it was. And Jameel Douglas, he was playing too.
And he stunk. And so now it's right tackle, and right tackle is more important than right guard, and yes, I'm worried, and I think I should be allowed to be worried about this.
Absolutely, you should be worried about this, but at what point is it, you know, because I think right now it's a legitimate concern moving forward, but at what point is it like, okay, we're going into week one, we're going into the preseason game one, like, when are you going to be legitimately concerned?
When Sam Brailo doesn't get out there. Because I do think Sam Brailo can play. You know, this is the one thing that I'll give Robinson credit for. We all thought he was nuts when he traded Doriel Green Beckham to the Philadelphia Eagles for Dennis Kelly. And because the Eagles were going to cut Kelly. And so in order to get this, you got a little insurance to tackle. And for 4 or 5 years or however long it was, Dennis Kelly was a really solid Titan. You cut Dennis Kelly, which I was nervous about, and I still am a little nervous about, but last year when they decided to move Kelly up when Conklin left, when they decided to move him up, I kind of felt like, okay, Sam Brailo's the new Kelly, and when Lawan got hurt, Sam Brailo went in, and I thought he played well. So I do believe in Sam Brailo. So once Sam Brailo doesn't get out there and we're getting close to the season, if they're practicing against the Bucs and David Quesenberry's at right tackle, I'm worried. That's when I'm worried. But yes, I mean, this is right tackle, folks. This is not a made-up position. This is not safety. This is not, like, kicker is a mess right now, but I know that somebody else is going to get cut in another camp, and then that guy's going to come in and be the kicker. This is a right tackle. See, I'm a little worried about it.
But I think it's fair to be worried, but also asterisk, it's August 4th worried. And I think that's different than August 25th worried.
With a veteran guy like Lamb, do you think that if they're already not playing him at right tackle, that if Vrabel says they believe in him and are going to give him a shot, but with a veteran guy like that, do you think it's kind of writing on the wall?
It feels like it, but like, what are the odds that they can plug in Kendall Lamb at left tackle? I mean, that's really the only thing that I could see.
Well, it's like somebody today tried to argue with me that left tackle is more valuable than right tackle, so Lamb playing left tackle tells you that they believe in him. And I'm like, if Jack Conklin was still on this team, he'd be at right tackle.
Right.
Because he's the right tackle. And so for Lamb to be at left tackle and not right tackle tells me that he is not right now the right tackle. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. The Titans, the Athletic, has come out with the defensive rankings, and they do have an improvement for the Titans, but is it a good enough improvement? We will discuss next. Stillman & Company, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game, and we're streaming on the Game Nashville app.